will. There we go.
Okay. So good evening. I will call to order this public online meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission. It is February 3rd, 2021. My name is Sean Denniston and I am the chair of the commission. Jack, we have a fair amount of noise on the line. I don't know if we...
Could everyone mute if you're not muted?
Right. Thank you, everyone. At some point, we'll all get used to this. You should all be able to see tonight's meeting agenda on your screen. If you can't see the screen and have joined by phone only, I will be announcing the agenda items as we move through the meeting topics. Due to COVID-19, regular meetings and public hearings of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission will be held in a virtual meeting room. This will allow for safe participation by commission members, staff, and any citizen interested in attending. Members of the public and applicants have joined as an attendee, which means you can see and hear the event if you join via computer or mobile device, or you can just hear the event if you join by phone. Other event participants cannot see your video and cannot hear your audio unless you are acknowledged by the commission chair or staff and are unmuted. Tonight's agenda is as follows. We have roll call and introductions, minutes approval, public comment, a presentation on our mid-century modern context statement and inventory project. We have committee updates and old business and new business, and then adjournment. So hopefully we can have a fairly short meeting tonight. We will start with a roll call of Preservation Commission members who are present for this meeting. So commission members, please say, "I'm here," after I call your name. Greg.
Here.
There we go. Belly. Andy.
I'm here.
Michelle.
Here.
Don.
Here.
Julie.
Here.
And of course, I'm here as well. So I will now entertain a motion for the approval of the November 4th, 2020 meeting minutes. Please say your name when making a motion and seconds.
Andy, so moves.
This is Michelle, and I'll second.
All right. So we'll go ahead and take the roll call vote. Belly?
Aye.
Andy?
Aye.
Michelle?
Aye.
Don?
Aye.
Julie?
Aye.
Greg?
Yes.
And I vote in favor as well. So Jackie, it passes unanimously. We will now take public comment on any items not on the agenda. I do see that we have a couple of attendees. So Jackie will provide instructions on how to make public comment for those joining us through their computer mobile device and those joining by phone. Jackie?
Thank you, Sean. For those that are joining us tonight and would like to make a public comment and are using your WebEx or computer application, if you would like to comment, please utilize the raised hand icon. You can do this by clicking the participant button or icon, and then that will bring the little hand up at the lower right-hand corner. Or depending on what device you are using, you should be able to see the hand. So once you've raised your hands, we'll call on individuals, and you'll be given 3 minutes to speak. If you could, then when you are done, to lower your hand and press the hand icon again so that we can move on to the next public commenter. For those that are using the phone, and I don't see anyone using the phone, so I'm not going to go into the directions for that. So it looks like everyone tonight is joining by internet connection. So would anyone like to make a comment?
All right. I think that's a good pause for technical issues. So we will go ahead and move to our first agenda item, which is a presentation on our Mid-Century Modern Context Statement and Inventory Project. So this is informative based on the grant proposal that we wrote last year to prepare this project. We have selected the subcontractor and, well, the contractor, I'm sorry. So they'll be the ones presenting on this project. There'll be an opportunity for the commission to ask questions, offer input, and also opportunity for the public to offer any comment on the project as well. So Peter and Tricia, go ahead and take it away. So there is, that noise is back. So I think it might be either Peter or Tricia that we're getting it from.
I'm on headphones and I'm gonna throw Peter under that one. Sorry, Peter.
Well, commissioners, I'm Peter Meijer, principal at PMA, and joining me is Tricia Forsey with our preservation planning group. We are delighted to meet with you. This is the first of two public meetings, and I will turn it over to Tricia to walk you through the background, where we are headed in a little bit of work to date, and then happy to entertain any questions or comments that the commission may have. Tricia?
Thank you, Peter. And then Jackie, just as a quick upfront, I'll ask for slides as I go through. That'll work best on your end. Fantastic. So thank you for the introduction and good evening. My name is Tricia Forsey, and I'm a preservation planner with PMA. During this presentation, I'll provide you with a brief background of PMA's previous survey work before discussing the Mid-Century Modern Survey of Clark County. I'll go over the scope, approach, plan for stakeholder involvement, as well as the schedule and the deliverables. If you could go to the next slide, please. Thanks. Peter Meijer Architect produces innovative restoration, preservation, and material science solutions in response to architecture and planning needs. PMA has years of experience documenting cities, neighborhoods, properties, and cultural resources. This includes writing National Register nominations, historic context statements, design guidelines, and completing survey and inventory forms. For Clark County Survey, PMA will work with local resources, contact stakeholders, and maintain a strong rapport with the Washington Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation, aka DAP. So PMA's previous work in resource surveys includes a residential mid-century survey with the City of Olympia in Washington, a thematic survey of modern movement non-residential architecture in St. Louis, Missouri, and a reconnaissance level survey of Portland's historic modern resources in the central city. As Sean had alluded to, there's just a bit of background on how we got to where we are right now on the survey. Clark County applied for a grant through DAP during the summer of 2020 to complete a reconnaissance level survey. This survey is to include 40 to 50 mid-century buildings and be accompanied by a historic context statement. The RFP stated intention was to raise public awareness about the significance of the county's mid-century modern heritage, particularly the mid-century modern style, and need for preservation of these buildings from the period. In December 2020, PMA was selected to execute this project, and we are thrilled to do so. PMA held a brief kickoff meeting on January 15th with Sean from the commission and with Jackie. And I'll touch on some of those items brought up during the meeting during this presentation as well. So next slide, please. So taking a second, we're going to look at the scope and approach of this project. From the beginning, the total number and type of mid-century resources located in Clark County is relatively unknown. With PMA's past experience and surveys of this era, we plan to efficiently hone in on what are the most appropriate properties to include in the survey and how we can best work closely with county stakeholders as we select those properties. So next slide, please. All right, so here we have a table of what the RFP proposed on the left and how PMA would recommend proceeding with the reconnaissance level survey on the right. Let's begin with the time frame. The RFP called for a period of 1930 to 1970. Based on Clark County's GIS data, that includes roughly 9,000 buildings. By limiting the time frame to 1950 to 1967, this reduces the total number of resources countywide to about 5,300 buildings. We're still quite a ways off from the 40 to 50 goal of the survey. So on to location, one way we thought we could reduce the scope and identify the location would be to look better at location type, so city, suburban, rural, something to that effect. During the kickoff call in January, we agreed that beginning from urban cores and expanding outward would be a good way to approach this survey. Jumping ahead to building type. The RFP didn't specify a type of building to focus on. PMA recommended beginning with commercial and institutional buildings located in urban centers of Clark County. This is based on the county's GIS data. Again, there are about 600 buildings that would qualify under that as commercial or institutional in an urban core from 1950 to 1967. So again, not at the 40 to 50 yet, but 600 is a lot closer than we were at with the 9,000. While this adjusted scope does not include residential, it is worth noting that understanding the residential development patterns of the period in Clark County will still greatly inform the historic context statement. So at the end of the day, the more manageable path for both budget and timeline is to examine the commercial and institutional buildings. Jackie, if I could have the next slide, please. So to help PMA hone in on the 40 to 50 buildings to include, we have worked with both Jackie and Sean to identify interested parties. With their help, we've already been in touch with all the people you see listed on this screen. We've already had input from some of them and a list of about 25 buildings right now. So not quite high enough yet. So hopefully between those 600 and these 25, we're getting there. Moving on to the next slide, let's take a quick look at schedule and deliverables. We can move on to schedule, please. Now, I realize there's a lot on this table, but the main takeaway is that originally the RFP called for a time frame of January to November of 2021. PMA thought it would be most efficient to use a more condensed timeline, wrapping in July. This timeline does include periods for a draft survey form and draft historic context statement to be reviewed by both Clark County and DAP along the way. And then on to deliverables. Thanks, Jackie. Per the RFP, there are essentially three deliverables to this project. The first are the reconnaissance level survey forms for 40 to 50 properties submitted through DAP's Wizard system. These will be written by the July deadline, but I imagine it's always a bit of a lag to get things onto that system, so it may take us till the end of summer just to get them uploaded. The second is a historic context statement. This will be following both DAP and the Park Service's guidelines for components of a historic context statement. And the third are two public meetings. You're attending the first. And the second will also be held before the Historic Preservation Commission to at the end of the process to share our findings and the historic context statement. And with that, thank you for allowing me to present the survey. And let me know if you have any further questions.
So this is Michelle Kapitanovich. I have a question. So how do you, you know, with you said that you had a list of about 25 buildings that people have submitted, and then there's this, you know, these other 600 commercial industrial buildings. So there's a whole bunch of buildings. How do you take all those buildings and weed it down to the 40 to 50 that you're looking at? What's the criteria or how does that happen?
Yeah, great question. One of the ways that I think could be best is as we're getting more of these lists, we focused on cities. And so far, Le Center and Camas have responded, and both of them have 2 to 3 buildings that they're recommending. And we have one from the Historical Society, and I think part of the staff of Vancouver, and that's making up the bulk of the list right now. So it may end up being a geographic limit. We're still early enough in this process that maybe it's the I-5 corridor of Vancouver, and that could be how we bring it in. I've yet to hear from some of the other cities, so we're going to be reaching out to them and get their final feedback. So we want to hear from all interested parties. But that's, it may end up being down to just a geographic area or down further by time frame, if that has a broad way of looking at it. But early in the process, that's where we're going to start from for now.
So it's Michelle again, sorry. So I think what I hear you saying is a lot of it's driven by submissions. Is that correct?
For now, yes. That's getting us started.
Okay.
Michelle, this is Peter Meijer. One of the things that we need to be aware of as we do this is to understand that Clark County has a number of constituents, each of which may desire to use the results in their own manner. It's not unusual, as you can imagine, in our experience in working with areas and metropolitans, that you start out with those 9,000 and need to hone it down to 50. And our role as sub-consultants is to work with those who are within the community invested. And so we have gone out and reached out, and to help us as the unknown entity, work with those of you who know much better your communities and perhaps have a rationale for giving us those properties. We know that they can all be of equal value. Those 600 from a historic perspective may be all of equal value, which is why we seek input from, again, different groups, different constituents.
So this is Don Trost, I have a question. Are you looking at commercial, and are you looking at themes of change commercial development? So for example, when I think of the 50s and 60s, as an appropriate age to be a child of the 50s and 60s, I think of the growth of suburban shopping centers, strip malls, which became, you know, a major factor in most Western communities. I don't know about Vancouver. I'm new to this area. I grew up in Sacramento, California. But if you were looking at that, would that be a building in your concept, like a strip mall, or is that even something you're looking at? I mean, it's not very interesting architecture, in my opinion, but maybe it is historically of some significance in terms of how we evolved as a society.
It most certainly is an interesting building of the era. The challenge too is that we're trying to look into the qualities of integrity and what buildings best showcase that era of the 50s and the 60s. And the challenge, particularly of strip malls, as you're calling out, is that they have so much changeover too, being strip malls. So the tenants have changed, the storefronts have changed, things are about it don't hold that level of integrity. So I guess this also harps back to Michelle's question of, when we're looking at properties, trying to make sure that we are selecting ones that are also good examples of that architectural style and have integrity as far as design and massing and workmanship and things along those lines. So if there's a really great strip mall out there, I wouldn't say no. It's hard to find one that hasn't been modified in the decades since.
And to add to that, you are correct on the importance of the car and the growth of the automobile in the 50s and 60s, and strip malls played a role in that. What we haven't really talked about is the importance of the context statement, and what Tricia did mention in the presentation is that the context statement is much broader than perhaps these focus on the 40 or 50 properties. So it's, the context statement is the influence within that time period, very regionally, very locally. If there's only one strip mall versus, you know, it will be less influential than 50 strip malls, so to speak. But we would look at those broader context statements for retail, commercial, residential, neighborhood, throughout the Clark County area.
We have an interesting commercial type here in Clark County, which is because it was built during the shipyard boom, it's this odd fusion of pre-war typologies and post-war typologies. So you have a lot of post-war architectural trends, you know, Roman brick and, you know, the parapet wall kind of roofing details, these kind of storefront aesthetic trends that are very typical of post-war architecture, but it's being fused with a more pre-war sensibility of, you know, buildings that are still fronting on the sidewalk instead of fronting on parking lot. So we have these kinds of these odd commercial buildings built in, especially through the 40s. And then kind of right after the war, we have some other commercial buildings that are showing kind of the emergence of a parking lot, you know, speaking specifically to this trend, that I think is, and none of these buildings are, you know, fine architectural specimens. but when you're getting to the, the context statement, I think that they really show something about the way that Clark County's architecture specifically developed through the mid-century. I will send you, I feel weird about this, I'll send you a report that I wrote from Vancouver that covers some of these things, as it feels very weird to say that, but I can send it to you, and you'll be able to see some examples in there. It's focused on one specific part of Vancouver, but there are other parts of Clark County that saw very similar trends, with kind of this, an emergence of the proto strip mall in Vancouver that was quickly replaced in the 50s.
Our role is to say thank you. Truthfully, those of you who live and work in the region, Tricia and I are new to your environment. So all of this background, we had talked about others, Michael Hauser and his reporting on mid-century modern in the state of Washington. All of that is background documentation that we'd like to acquire and review, and then weigh all of that along with our own experience and expertise in the mid-century modern and what we've learned of the trends and other. But the purpose is very much to make this a regional and local report. So thank you.
So this is Michelle again. I have one more question. So should we expect to see very many residential homes in the report, or is it going to be mostly commercial industrial buildings? Or do you know?
So for now, with the limitations of scope, the inventory might include heavier leaning towards commercial and institutional, but those residential trends are informative of how the area developed. I mean, looking at like the pockets of residential that formed between I-5 and 205 because bridges were being built, like all of those are still part of how Clark County came to be. So those will be involved in the context statement. It'd probably end up being a little broader as far as touching on the styles of homes, but that's more likely to be not part of the inventory, but part of the context statement. But again, we're still open to the idea of shifting towards residential, but I think the most efficient for budget and timeline will be to do commercial.
Sean?
Sean? Do any of the other commissioners have any questions or comments? Becky, you were about to say.
I was just going to say, we didn't quite put it in the agenda, but I was wondering if it would be okay maybe to see if anyone from the audience has any questions or wants to provide any info.
Yep, that was the next step. Since this is an agenda item, we now have an opportunity for any members of the public who would like to make a comment on this agenda item are welcome to do so now. So same instructions as before. If you would like to make a comment and you're on a mobile device or computer, go ahead and raise your hand, please.
Okay, we have Lynn Hunt. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, Lynn, and go ahead and you should be able to hear that you're unmuted.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, I just saw the notice about this in the paper, and I'm really interested in mid-century modern. We live in a mid-century modern home, and I wasn't sure if they were going to be included, so you answered that for me. Our home was actually built by one of, designed by an architect that studied with Frank Lloyd Wright. And so I think it's pretty unique here in Clark County. And, but anyway, I'm excited about the project, even if it's just commercial buildings. So yeah, I'm glad I got to join tonight and get a preview of what's to come. And, you know, if volunteers or you need community members to participate, I might be interested in that.
Thank you, Lynn. If you want to, will you send me an email so we can stay connected on this project?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Do you, my contact should be on the website.
Who's speaking right now?
This is Jackie. Sorry.
Oh, hey, Jackie. I'll send you an email. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
This is Tricia also saying thank you, Lynn.
Sorry, I can't figure out how to put my camera on. I don't know. Maybe audience members aren't allowed to have their camera on. So you hear my voice.
No worries. Thank you so much. Let me know if you have any other questions. This is Jackie.
Okay, I will.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? I don't see any other hands, Sean.
All right, then we will go ahead and move on to our next agenda items. We have a series of committee updates or announcements. So we'll go ahead and check in on some of our committees, and we will start with our SEPA committee. Are there any updates from that committee?
So
showed up so you can, you guys can talk now.
So I believe, Sean, that you're referring to the committee that Don and I are on. Is that correct, having to do with the academy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. As far as I know, nothing has come up before the Vancouver City Council on it. Jackie was going to let us know when it does, and then Don and I are going, I think, swooping into action.
That's correct.
The one thing, you're right, Michelle. Thank you. I didn't realize that was the name of the committee. So the answer is, and I have been watching my email closely, so I've not ignored it, but we have not gotten anything yet, unless Jackie has a surprise for us. So no, we've done nothing on it.
I think Jason might have an update. He looks like he might be speaking.
I'm trying to speak. I was, you know, the classic case of speaking while muted. That never happens, right? So we still have not received any further documents from the Academy on that. So we're just in a holding pattern. The ball's in their court at this point. And as we promised you all, as soon as we had that additional information that enabled us to move forward with processing the SEPA document, noticing it, you would be part of that notification. And at that point, you could meet as a group and formulate your comments. So at this point, we're still in a holding pattern. I wish I had more for you, but I don't.
Thank you for that, Jason. We understand, and we stand by. We also serve, who only stand and wait.
All right. And so our next committee is the Vancouver Heritage Overlay Code Committee. And I am on that one, and so and as well as Andy. So unless Andy has something to share, I don't think we have an update on that one.
I do have an ancillary item I wanted to share. I had the pleasure since our last meeting of working with Mark Pearson of the City of Vancouver, and it involves the Dean Urban Susan Courtney properties that were added to the historic register during November. And so in order to make the deadline for the end of December, Mark and I collaborated and I signed and sent the certificates for the House on the River and the Melvin's Men's Shop building. And I received a very nice thank you note from Dean Urban, and I'll read it for everybody because it's a feel-good moment to know that the property owner who worked so hard in collaboration with Brad on the end, Sean, on getting these items on the register. It says, happy holidays, Andy. Thank you for mailing the certificates, and thank you for the commission's continuing support with their time and knowledge. Happy New Year, sincerely, Dean Urban.
Thanks, Andy.
Sure.
All right. So we'll move on to our next update. So Jackie, you have an update on the 2022 CLG grant application period?
Yes, just wanted to let the commission know that they've opened the application period. I've got it pulled up here. Just wanted to share what the priorities are for this year. Citywide historic context statements, products and our activities to plan for the protection of historic properties, and then survey of underrepresented resources. So those are their three priorities that they've announced for this round. I think the due date is, I want to say, April 23rd. I know we haven't discussed much, but I wanted to share. If we were to do one, I would need a lot of support from the commission members just because we're down a staff member right still, and just kind of workload on my end. So if there was something you want to do, I would need some help in preparing that and getting it ready. But I wanted to let you know we can kind of marinate on it and maybe bring it back up in March, if that works okay.
So we have our draft of the unreinforced masonry concept that we could brush off and update. I know we decided not to move forward. We decided to move forward with the mid-century modern one instead of that one last time around. So that's one that we can certainly consider moving forward with. I think probably a good, homework for the rest of the commission members is think of anything else, any other ideas to put into the hopper, and especially if you are willing to help, because Jackie is shorthanded on this. And we'll put this on the agenda for, well, not next month, month after for April. Next month, we're pretty full. But that April may not be soon enough.
Yeah, so, that's pretty tight.
Yeah, so at least sharing. So go ahead and email them to Jackie so that we can see if there are any others. So Jackie, we would need to, if we decide to move forward with a particular topic, we would need to vote on that to submit, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Jackie, I'd be very glad to help you with this procedure of all parts of getting the grant put together. And in addition to the unreinforced masonry, this perhaps be a time that we could resurrect the intangible cultural resource concept that we had planned to do at the national conference. And also, I'm looking at the criteria here. This plays very well with Fele's idea about the committee to look at the underrepresented resources, and that could include some intangibles as well with our tribal population. And so I'm keen to help Fele with that project, and I'm available and have plenty of time. And so I'd be happy to do whatever I can to see that we get this grant applied for, and I think we have a really good chance of receiving it.
I Okay.
So let's set a deadline for everyone to get ideas to Jackie before the next commission meeting, and we may just have to cram in a quick vote to authorize one of them to move forward, and then we can assign people to actually work on it to make sure that it happens. I think choosing a topic and authorizing a group to work on it should not take much time, but I have heard the rumblings that March is going to be a pretty full agenda right now.
Yes, that sounds like a good plan.
All right. Is any further discussion from the commission? All right, well, then we will move on to our next item, old business and updates. So Feli is with us this meeting, so now we can get our much anticipated update on the 2020 Cultural Resource Summit.
Ah, it's at the bottom. The button's at the bottom, you guys. All right, thank you so much for setting this time aside for me. I think it's been two meetings. We didn't have the last one, but the one before that, you guys, COVID is real. It is affecting so many people in the workplace. My actual godmother, rest in peace, just passed away. So I really hope that you guys are being super, super safe and that your loved ones are being protected. But long story short, okay, I'm back. I'm really excited to talk about this. I am just asking for guidance. I want to keep this dialogue open. I had the privilege of attending the Cultural Resource Summit, and I attended as many sessions as I could. I was taken aback by how little I am aware of the struggles of the Native American culture. I love our country very much. It is in the most controversial time that I think most of us have ever lived through for so many different reasons. And it almost just knocked me to my knees to hear that these people are still dealing with the same stuff that they were when their entire world was taken over. And I just didn't, that's what I took from the whole experience. I mean, I took all these notes on current things that were happening in this culture, and it just felt like I was traveling back about 200 years dealing with like ancient, you know, ancient rivalries. It was just like we're still here, we're still doing this. So I was not as present as I would have liked to have been, and that was also something that I felt like needed addressing, as I'm not sure how engrossed most of us are in the Native American culture or the problems or the progress that is being made. But ultimately, I feel like in this position, I'm new. I really wanted to just serve the city. I really wanted to get involved. I love Clark County. I grew up here. I benefited from a lot of charitable work here. I didn't have any money as a kid. Everything I do is about just giving back to the community and really trying to figure out how we can do that. And so in having a conversation with a fellow commission member, I was inspired to really seek some guidance on what can really be done about getting our hands on what resources are out there and not being tapped into for underrepresented cultures out here. A lot of these funds are being reallocated in ways that we don't understand or quite know. I think that it would be a good idea to really kind of see and make sure, if any way possible, that these are actually being used for what they could be. I really feel that in the Northwest specifically, we need to give the Native American culture, in addition to the African American culture, in addition to the Hispanic culture, whatever funding is allocated to them, because I know there is some. I know there is some for every single one of those groups. Whichever ones I'm missing, I'm just really kind of seeking guidance on what we can do as commission members to really kind of oversee this and implement whatever we can to make sure that these cultures are being done the justice they can be with the funds that the government is allocating to them for these things. maybe that looks like having a subcommittee where we are reaching out to the national groups that represent these people in the area to really make sure we have hands on this. I am kind of just seeking the committee's thoughts on what they think can be done and what we should, what direction maybe I could take personally as a commission member. I just want to know. I just really want to know. I think that it's imperative and it's within our grasp to really help. And more so than just do a service to the community, I feel like I that's what I would really like to do personally. Thoughts? Anybody?
So I can give you a personal opinion. It's not based on any in-depth knowledge of the Pacific Northwest, but let me give a little context. One of the clients of my company, who we've done a lot of work for, is the Navajo Nation. In addition, we also are mentor to, I think it's six pueblos in northern New Mexico, helping them increase their participation in the Los Alamos National Laboratory contracts and help them with economic development and improving the opportunities, working opportunities of that nation. And we're also doing grant work in the Four Corners. So as a company, by the way, most of this work, while we're a for-profit company, this tends to be a drain on our profit, not a plus for it. So we're doing this not out of the kindness of our heart, I'm not gonna say that, but we're not doing it for the kind of profit we can get from other clients, I can assure you. What I believe is that this is a multifaceted problem that has many elements to it. And again, I can't really speak for the Pacific Northwest. I've not done any work up here. And let me say from the experience I've had working with the different groups, pueblos and tribes I just mentioned, that each one of them has a unique problem. And within the Navajo Nation, which I believe has the largest physical territory, land area, up in the Four Corners and a couple of states, they have multiple problems within that reservation. Everything from serious drug problems in the community, alcoholism, inability to encourage and get their youth into schools. And one of the problems is when they come back, there aren't any jobs for them anyway. So it is a very, very complex problem, and it's different from group to group. I don't know how you solve that problem except by rolling up your sleeves, reaching out, and trying. You don't try to stop, you don't try to fix world hunger. You try to feed a child. And I think what needs to happen is there has to be an outreach, clearly. But let me say the other part of the problem. It's hard to build trust with this particular community in our experience. So we are a science and engineering consultancy. We are predominantly elderly, white men with physics degrees and chemistry degrees. And if you're old in that business, you typically were white and you typically were male. That's just the way the industry grew up. And we reach out to these communities and it's hard to build trust. And we talk about it and I always point out, well, if you were a Native American, would you trust a white man talking to you after your experience for the last 250 years? So I understand it, but it makes it hard sometimes for those of us that would like to help because there is a difficulty building trust and confidence. So it takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of one-on-one work. It takes a willingness to fail several times before you get a success. We got the first 911 call center on the Navajo Nation helping them. And that was a major accomplishment for a tribe that has horrendous crime problems on its reservation, and it covers a huge area. You've seen some of the things that they talk about in the movies with young women disappearing, all those problems exist in spades on the Navajo Nation. The Pueblos are not quite as bad, but they have their challenges too. And their challenges tend to be drugs, alcohol, lack of opportunity when the kids go to school and come back. And while we're trying to help, there's also some tension and conflict about culture. That one of the concerns that we've had expressed to us is, yeah, we're doing this, but we have to do it and give up our own culture to fit into effectively the white man's world. And even that is stressful. Some of the older members of reservations are turned off by the youngsters using cell phones even. They don't want them to have cell phones because that's contrary to their traditions. So it takes a lot of time and a lot of patience. I can't speak, again, to the Pacific Northwest, and I don't want to oversimplify it, but I also want to say this respectfully, that I agree with you that this is a forgotten group of people who have suffered terribly. Not the only minority group that suffered terribly, but they've suffered terribly, and it's hard to help them. And institutionally, it's very difficult too, because the institutions, frankly, the institutions of our country, are not designed to deal with them on their terms, but are designed to tell them, now you change, and we'll deal with you if you change to our terms. And that in itself is a huge cultural challenge. So I admire your interest and your passion for it, and I think it's a worthy goal. But I think if we're going to undertake it, we need to go into it with the eyes wide open, that this is a long-term problem that's going to require a lot of hard work and probably many disappointments before we get anything like a success. But a worthy effort, definitely a worthy effort.
Don. Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry. Who was that?
This is Michelle.
Oh, please go ahead.
So, Feli, you know, I don't know, maybe Jackie could help me out here a little bit and Julie a little bit. And I don't know if this is kind of where you're thinking about heading, but there seems to be, like, in the last couple of years, especially when Alex was on the board, there was this move towards intangible cultural resources. And Julie, if I remember correctly, you did some work with Alex on that, kind of trying to help preserve those underrepresented communities and the culture, the really important cultural traditions that they have. And so Jackie and Julie, I don't know if that would fall into what Feli is looking at, but that's just kind of what came to mind as we were talking about this.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and jump in if that's okay. Oh, Feli, go ahead.
Go ahead. I just want to say really quick, absolutely. So you guys, overall, what I took from this, from the Native Americans specifically, is that, like, with NAGPRA, with, like, the NCAI, with all of these national represented groups, ultimately they're created, right? They're acknowledged, but they're still not abided. Nobody is really asking them what they want, asking if it's okay. Ultimately, these people just want to be listened to again, actually reaffirm that, yes, we acknowledge this was your land. It is sacred to you. We would like to move this structure. Is there anything there that is so sacred? And if so, how can we compromise? That doesn't happen. It's still not happening. So yes, this is exactly what I want to hear. I'm sorry, Julie, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Yeah, so this does fall a little bit into what we had tried to organize about a year ago. It was with, I think Andy was on it with Alex and I, and Sharon, who's two of those people have since left. So that's, we true, initially had wanted to work on as a committee on intangible cultural heritage, and that did, in a sense, encompass, or the scope did kind of gather in some of the Native American cultures in our community, in our surrounding environment. And like you said, Michelle, Alex was very knowledgeable. He had lots of different contacts, and he had people that he worked with as an archaeologist that were liaisons with different Native American groups in our community. And so I feel like he was a really good resource to have on that group. But in the end, we decided that this type of intangible cultural resource was better suited at a state level. And so we kind of put it up to them. We drafted, there was a report that we drafted, and just kind of sent it up to that level in the hope that it would be part of our kind of statewide scope of activities, so that we could look at intangible cultural heritage for the state, because we couldn't really identify any specific to just Clark County. But in terms of the Native American question, that doesn't mean that we couldn't still somehow have participation or some kind of relationship. I guess the question is, for me, in terms of, and I think your questions are well put, is there funding for historic preservation specific to these cultures? Like, is there such a thing in our context? I mean, obviously there's money for different subgroups within our culture, within our country, in different areas, but for our purposes of culture, of historic preservation, is that something that is available and that we're just, that people don't know about? And are you asking if we can gather that information and kind of make that connection with people? I know that things have been done, though. I mean, there's things in Camas that have been done, and there's different Native American groups that have been worked with on historic preservation. I'm not as informed on it because I'm also a year and a half, 2 years into this community. So, but if there is funding that way, I guess that's more of a question of to Jackie or to the county. And are we tapping into that already? And how's that working? Does that sort of fall in line of what you're thinking, Philly? A little bit.
Yes. No,
I think that on this topic, you know, this is something that I have to deal with in my day job as well. How kind of governmental regulations and actions impact traditionally disadvantaged communities. And I think that where we are right now is in the communication stage, you know, because there is so much that I think we as a commission don't know. And so I think probably one of my first questions would be for Jackie is whether the county has any kind of formal relationship with any of the local communities, and then specifically whether the commission has any kind of formal relationship or has had in the past with any of these communities. So that might be the first step, is to just have engagement and begin the conversations and find out how the things that our commission does could be benefited, you know, could benefit or to be desired. Or, you know, I think there's a really important element of not trying to tell people what they need. So I guess that fundamental question, Jackie, do we have any kind of formal relationship with any of the local communities? Any of the Native tribes? Or
the Cowlitz Indian tribe, you know, kind of a newly designated tribe, west of La Cena, right? So yes, we, you know, now that we have a relationship with them. I think we actually, the commission had one of their tribal archaeologists or cultural specialists come speak with us a couple years ago. So I'm sure we can reconnect with him. I also have connections with their planner through, you know, what we do in community planning. So we do have a connection to that, as well as, you know, you all know SEPA. So we have contact information, right, for all of the other tribes that would receive any of our environmental SEPA documents for land use projects. So we do have those. So I'm happy to share. Alex would probably be a good resource to just kind of help connect the dots on some of these things, because he has that. Or even the fort, or Doug Wilson, who does a lot of work in this as well. So I would always reach out to our resources and our friends that are kind of work in that field a lot, and try to work with the Native American tribes on archaeological stuff to at least help bridge that gap. But that's what I can tell you is what I know.
So I think that one, if we're looking for concrete steps, one concrete step that we could take is to treat, you know, some of these community leaderships like we do city councils. You know, we've got a presentation that we give to city councils. Hey, this is what we can do. It might be worthwhile to begin, you know, the same discussion. Hey, this is what we do. And then begin to ask the questions. How can we better engage your communities? You know, even asking fundamental questions like, in what ways does what we do not work for you? You know, that what Don brought up earlier, you know, about not making it a way that any of these communities would have to, you know, necessarily integrate into our systems. It's how are our systems potentially failing them? I think beginning that conversation is a very concrete and very manageable first step that we could take. And if that means forming a subcommittee, you know, so that we could begin to have those conversations, that does make sense.
One of the things, so in my formal federal life, one of the things that we ran into, and a good example is the Hanford Reservation, since I worked at the Department of Energy, though I didn't work in Hanford. But the infringement of federal activities, and this could also apply to activities within the county, on sacred lands of the Native people, has been an issue all over the nation, clearly. And to the extent that we can document what resources within the county might be of special value to any underrepresented community, be it Native Americans or otherwise, would be maybe a step that we could do, at least documenting it as a commission. I realized after I said what I said that I'm talking about a lot of things broader than this Historic Preservation Commission has responsibilities for. I guess it's just my own frustration with not being able to do more for them, more effectively help those communities in what we've done, even though we've done a pretty good job. So it seems to me that's something we could look at. It is largely architectural, I think, but perhaps, you know, the issues of fishing areas, fishing grounds, burial grounds, hunting grounds, ceremonial grounds. I don't know if there are any in Clark County, but it seems to me that those things, to the extent they haven't already been disturbed and destroyed by development, are things that we could maybe identify and document to be something that ought to be considered as part of any future development, for that matter.
And
at least that's a start.
And we do have our own grant program that we administer, you know, doing a more targeted outreach to encourage, you know, certainly historically underrepresented communities, like you said, like these, and there's, you know, some others that are in a similar situation, encouraging them to really make use of the thing, you know, the resources that we do have. You know, as a commission, we don't have a lot of resources, but we do have resources. And so trying to make sure that they have a broader service, I think, is another concrete step that we could take. That one as well is, you know, depends on that issue of the engagement and the communication, I think, being the first step.
Yeah, and I'll just make one just other small comment. I know when we were on that initial committee, Alex had reached out to some of his colleagues and counterparts and in various Native American tribes that he works with on a regular basis, and he had some difficulty getting them to respond or show interest, even though really what we were trying to collect were those intangible cultural heritage pieces, which, you know, just the, you know, the camas roots and how they would harvest them. You know, there's a lot of history and a lot of like context there for cultural preservation. And having his colleague that, like you said, was a tribal representative, or he had a connection, had some kind of cultural role, and him coming and speaking to us, I thought was helpful to kind of give us some context and then kind of get us in the door of that communication. Because I think that we really need to use those people who have those connections and relationships already.
And, you know, I'm on the museum board, and we just recruited Alex for that exact reason to be on the board as well. But I think that this actually, you know, raises kind of one of the issues is, you know, we went in that with the idea that intangible heritage was the topic that we needed to be talking about. And I'm not sure that we're even to that point. I think, you know, that's an assumption that might have been true, but the fact that we didn't get much bite says that maybe it wasn't. Maybe there's a different issue. So I do think starting with that communication. So as you know, our next agenda item is formation of a subcommittee to look at underrepresented communities. This might be the thing to do is, you know, we could form a subcommittee with the intent of beginning to engage communities to open the lines of communication. You know, maybe that means creating formal relationships, maybe it doesn't, but I think beginning conversations, and now is a difficult time to be doing that, so this might be a long-term, well, it's going to have to be long-term one way or the other. Do we have any thoughts on that as a concrete next step?
I love that as a concrete next step. And ultimately, I would love to take the reins in trying to make the connections with a lot of those people. Whether it is going to whatever national group is best representing this region or starting regionally or however possible, I think that we are all absolutely right in thinking the question should be, how better can we understand what you need from this community? I think that's it. I think that's really what they want out the gate. I think that is a great way to start building a dialogue for trust, a dialogue for trust, because it's gonna take a while, you're absolutely right. But I think that we can't keep saying that they just don't wanna trust us. I mean, we really can't blame them. And at the end of the day, I think that understanding how we can, you know, nothing can be reversed, but at the end of the day, we can learn more, we can appreciate more, we can share more, and we can all really appreciate more what we love so much about this region and what we call home. So I'm in. You guys just tell me what's next.
All right. So do we have a motion to form such a committee with that charge?
I mean, I'll make the motion. I'm making it.
There we go. So Feli made the motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. So the motion is to form a subcommittee to look at underrepresented communities and to begin to reach out to those communities to establish communication with them. Is there any discussion on the motion? We did just have a good discussion, so that's understandable. So we can go ahead and take a vote. Let me bring up my list. Well, actually, I'll just say, is anyone voting against? We'll just say it that way. You can speak up now. All right. So Jackie, we have no votes against, which we're going to take as a unanimous vote in favor. So Feli volunteered to be part of this subcommittee or committee. We can add up to two more people to join her. This is a topic that I hope we can get a full three people on. Is anyone else interested in joining?
I'll be happy to join Feli on the subcommittee. And wanted to say, since I have this opportunity, that when Sean and I spoke to leadership Clark County last fall, there was a participant who asked about this very topic specifically. And the only thing I could respond was that we do have a member, Ms. Vele Garcia, who had attended the 2020 Cultural Resource Summit, and that we had every intention on following this up. Now, what I would like to do is find out who from Leadership Clark County that interested person was, and not only to be able to say that, yes, we heard your question and responded to it in a meaningful way, but maybe to enlist members of Leadership Clark County, all of whom are interested in outreach and developing relationships, to see if that person who asked Sean and
and me that question in September would be also an ex officio kind of participant. So I think there are interested links out there, and I also want to reiterate how a former chair, Alex Gall, would be a really good resource too. And maybe we could cobble together some of the Cultural Resource Summit underrepresented populations, as well as the intangible cultural resources in this. And that would make a pretty swell grant request. So we could have some money to do something with this idea.
All right, we have one more slot. Would someone else like to join?
I'd be happy to join as well. This is Julie.
Okay, that's Julie. All right, so Jackie, if you could help them connect with Alex and any other contacts within the community that the county might have, then we can get moving. Thank you very much, Feli, for keeping this topic up for our commission and for helping to move it forward.
Thank you, guys.
So, Jackie, do we have any other new business?
I did want to share that the Downtown Camas interpretive panels. So this was your project that was funded through the historical promotion funds as a commission project. So there was a committee from the Downtown Camas Association and the Clark County Historical Museum and the county's graphic designer. So the Downtown Camas and the museum worked on the text and the research and finding photos, and then our graphic designer did the layout for the interpretive panels. So those have been sent to the fabrication, and so will be installed sometime this spring. And I think they're trying to coordinate it with like Camas Days or something so that it happens during one of those one of their programs that they have downtown. But I don't have a great but I wanted to share kind of what they look like. These are the files that go to the fabricator, so I don't know how well these will look. Give me one second. Sometimes these laptop screens are tiny. Okay. So there's three of them. So they've got kind of this intro about historic downtown Camas. A panel about the buildings, some call outs of those, some specific buildings of historic significance in downtown. And then lastly, the legendary locals of Camas. So I'm excited to see them, but I just wanted to let you know that where they were in the process. And I'm sure we will hear from Camas when they are ready to schedule the unveiling of them when they get to Camas and they install them. So just wanted to share that with you guys. That's all I had.
All right. Thank you, Jackie.
Sean, I have a question. This is Julie. So last year we had awarded certain grants money to a variety of applicants. And I know that at that time we had talked about whether or not we ever will hear back and get follow-up or have some kind of report out from the different recipients. Mm-hmm. And it's now been almost a year, I guess, and some of them were going to happen all in the height of the COVID year of COVID. So I don't know if a lot of them even happened. And if they didn't, do they get an extension? Do we have any information about what's transpired with those grantees?
And yes, kind of good question. Yes, thank you, Julie. Good question. So most of them got finished. There was three that did request an extension, this was one of them. So the interpretive panels needed a little bit more time. But once they have a 3-month extension till the end of March for everyone to complete everything. So I would like to come back and probably in April and share with you all of, because they provided reports and, you know, what the completed project was. So we can do a little share of the projects and what they accomplished, if that works for you guys.
That sounds great. Thank you.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
All right. Any other new business? Well, hearing none, I do want, as we go into our next meeting, like I said, Jackie has warned me that our agenda is fairly full. So we do have, since we have a couple of committees who are active right now, please let Jackie know before the commission meeting if there is a time-sensitive update that you need your committee to give. I think otherwise we're not even going to put updates on the agenda unless someone gives us a reason to, so that we can make sure that we're giving our agenda items their proper time and still not keeping everyone late.
Jackie, could you give us a preview of coming attractions?
Well, we've got several heritage overlay reviews, including the smokestack. Jason, I think you're still on here. Is that still on track for March?
Yep, that's on track. We're still kind of not uncertain on Spanky's. That's their goal. They want to go in March, but we have yet to receive a resubmittal. So I think if we don't get something soon, we're just going to have to tell them we need to move it to April. So.
Okay, good to know. And then lastly, we have a hearing for the Heritage Farm, also known as the Clark County Poor Farm. So there is a proposal for installing a new weather station out there. So it just kind of falls under a weird like new construction. So we just want to have the commission take a review, since it is a historic landscape. And just have you all review it that way. So they'll be before you in at the March meeting. So you'll see a staff report from me for that hearing.
All right. As we've learned, any meeting that has the Academy is automatically long. All right. With no other new business, we are finished with our agenda, and this month's February meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission is hereby adjourned. Thank you, everyone. And we will see you next month.
Good night.
Thanks, good night.